Obituary.
Francisco Lopera. The intrepid Colombian researcher into Alzheimer's disease died on September 10th, aged 73.
His father's tears persuaded him. Francisco Lopera, then in his first year of medical training, had gone with him to see his grandmother in Medellin. His father had not wanted him to study medicine. He thought he was not intelligent enough. But that was not why he wept. He wept because the old lady, in the last stages of Alzheimer's, stared blankly at them, not knowing who they were. Then and there, Francisco made a vow. When he became a doctor, that was not going to happen to any granny. Every ounce of his energy went into that promise, but it was hard to keep. Alzheimer's was incurable. By his count, more than 800 drugs had been tried on it to no effect. It was a sly disease, asymptomatic for as much as 30 years, but all that time sticky plaques of amyloid protein, rubbish as he thought of it, were being laid down in the brain and neurons were dying. Silently, the patient, his grandmother, was being destroyed. First, she forgot small things, then how to cook, then who she was. When dementia set in, she would not even know she had it. But her family would be exhausted and devastated. In the northern Colombian province of Antioquia, in the poor mountain villages where he had grown up, people had many theories about what caused la bobera, the foolishness. He had heard them all. You could catch it by having sex with a madwoman, or touching the bark of a rare tree, or a priest had left a curse after he found people stealing from the collection box. The prevalence of the disease in Antioquia was certainly strange, but that was a mystery he solved himself. In 1982, a farm labourer came to the hospital. At 47, he had abandoned work, and his speech was a crazed laugh. Nor was he alone. His father, his grandfather, and several aunts had had Alzheimer's too, not in old age, but in their 40s and 50s. This was early onset, and it was hereditary. At that point, Dr. Lopera saw his life's work mapped out. He would go, with a team of helpers, into the villages, not only to treat the patients, but to forage through wills and parish records, tracing the disease both back to the source and forward to those who were likely to suffer it in future. This meant weeks and years of travelling on horseback or in a complaining car up steep, rocky roads in a country that was locked in a civil war between right-wing paramilitaries and Marxist FARC rebels. He had been kidnapped by the FARC a few years before when he was working in the jungly Darien Gap on bat bites and snake bites and was forced to treat a shot gorilla. Later, a nurse working for him was abducted. The more serious effect of the war for him was that well-funded medical research teams in the United States did not want to go to Colombia. Until the 2000s, those essential collaborations were mostly at arm's length. Inside the village houses, he would comfort the families and engage with the victims. Some were already almost gone, vanishing into themselves and staring at infinity. He could not look away, though. He had to help. Many other patients were lively, combative, denying there was anything wrong. But if he asked them to hop, draw an object, or remember simple sentences, they no longer could. Younger family members lived in dread of going the same way in middle age. His hand-drawn genealogical chart, going back to one Basque family in the 18th century, grew to contain 6,000 family members, a fifth of them carriers. It took 40 years of work by 100 people, most of them members of the University of Antioquia's neurosciences group, which he had founded and led. The whole of Antioquia was an Alzheimer's laboratory. His journeys to villages also included asking for the brains of patients who had died. This was difficult. Generally, the families wanted to help him because he was kind, reassuring, wise, and a great dancer. They eagerly took part in a decade-long trial from 2012 of a new drug, crenezumab, which he hoped, sadly mistakenly, might delay the onset. Donating brains was harder. Sometimes he had to go to the funeral and join in the prayers to persuade them. But on the evidence of those brains, more than 300 stored in a special bank on campus, he and his colleagues found that hereditary Alzheimer's was linked to a single mutation of the presenilin 1 gene in chromosome 14. Now what he needed to find was another genetic mutation that would hamper the first. If the cause lay in nature, so would the cure. This meant investigating the rare individuals who carried the mutation for early-onset Alzheimer's, but had avoided it until old age. His work there paved the way to identifying two candidate genes, AP0E3, Christchurch, and Reelin-Kolbos, which seemed to have protected the neurons. If a molecule could now be found to inoculate younger adults, it could delay the disease for decades, a cure or almost so. But that was still elusive. Prevention was his best hope. Besides, hereditary Alzheimer's was a tiny fraction of all cases. In the rest, the cause was unknown. However, his genetic discoveries might also prove useful there. The human brain continued to hold mysteries, and he still burned to solve them. As a boy, he had wanted to be an astronomer, imagining all the greatest secrets lay out in the cosmos. Now he knew they were inside human heads. So was terror. Could anything be done, he was asked, to stop the fear of Alzheimer's that now possessed people as they aged? Yes, he said. First, they should not see it as a tragedy. It was a serious illness, certainly, but one largely without pain to the patient. It should not be over-dramatized, but, if possible, treated kindly within the family in an atmosphere of happiness. It should be seen as a new form of life.